This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Good Food Podcast. In this episode, Malika Bazou will be speaking with Dominique Wolf about Thai flavours and Asian ingredients, plus ideas for her children's lunchboxes.
So I will, if I've got time, I'll make oat bars with banana instead of sugar and, you know, all this stuff. You know, when they come home, it'll often be a rice cake with sugar-free peanut butter, which is the one I like anyway, crunchy, and some fruit.
And Dominique reveals her culinary confessions.
Welcome, Dominique. How nice it is to have you in the studio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, you've been up to lots of exciting things, haven't you?
Yes, it's been busy.
You have a new baby coming out in a few weeks' time, is that right?
I do, the Asian Pantry out in June.
And that is your second cookbook?
It is, yes.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. I don't know how you find the time to do it all, because how old are your three kids now?
Yeah, I've got a 6, 8, and a 9-year-old.
Wow, and have they helped with recipe development?
Oh, you know, no, they do taste things. They're very honest. They've got no filter.
I bet. These have been thoroughly tested, guys. You know, they don't hold back, do they, at that age?
Absolutely. No filter whatsoever. So, you know, it's had rigorous testing from the Three Monkeys.
Now, tell me a little bit more. I mean, that sounds very intriguing, the Asian Pantry.
Yes, I'm so excited about it. It's all about having these key ingredients in your pantry. And once you've got these, showing people how easy it is to whip up a dish, you know, midweek, anytime, even if you're sort of short on time, it's a Monday night and you're thinking, what do I have? I'm going to show you how to make really delicious, tasty food.
I love that. And so I think we'll all recognize that we have lots of ingredients from around Asia in our pantry. Some we know better than others. And so what your cookbook is going to do, I'm assuming, is put those ingredients to use in daily life without being necessarily from a nation or a cultural heritage. Is that right?
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head.
Oh, you good.
Know, it's for keen, well, not even keen home cooks. It's for people that cook food who love flavour. And it doesn't matter where the dish is from. You know, if you've got some gochujang, some tahini in the cupboard that you've bought for a recipe and you're thinking, what on earth do I do with it? Actually, we've got these amazing combinations, things you might not have thought of, that just kind of sing to your taste buds, but actually are really easy and you're not wasting all that food that you've sort of bought for other recipes.
I love that. And how many ingredients are we talking about here? How many ingredients does the Asian Pantry need?
So the Asian Pantry has 21, which might sound a lot, but actually, I think you'll find that a lot of people have most of these ingredients in their cupboard. So things like soy sauce or sweet chili, as I mentioned, tahini, peanut butter. You know, we're not talking about sort of so far flung exotic ingredients. I've sort of tried to keep it to stuff that you can get in your supermarket because I know that's how a lot of people shop. So it's keeping it simple and using those ingredients. You know, if I'm going to give you miso, I'm going to give you three recipes for it. So it's about kind of using them to the, you know, to the max.
I mean, I love the sound of this because I think we can all relate to having lots of open jars and bottles and higgledy-piggledy sort of packets and things lying around. And the other day I used yellow bean paste, actually, and I'd bought it for Sichuan cooking. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm not doing Sichuan cooking every day. So I just stirred it into some fried rice for a work-from-home lunch. And it was, dare I say so myself. I mean, you're obviously the expert, but, you know, it just sang. It sang on the tongue. And I suppose we could really do with some inspiration on that front.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. And, you know, I don't even, I once had a recipe for yellow bean paste. I couldn't find it. So I used miso actually. Yeah. So it's just sort of innovative combinations, twists on dishes, you know.
I love that. And miso is another one, by the way. I know we're talking about miso, but miso is another one that you will buy a jar and then you might use some of it in a soup. And then I've just started putting it in vegetable soups because it adds a pop of umami.
Yeah. It's delicious. And I love it in desserts as well. So,
oh, yes.
I've got a recipe in my other book and it, you know, you just add some sweetness to it and it just makes it this salted caramel vibe. Absolutely. Oh, gorgeous.
This sounds incredible. Now, it would seem natural, wouldn't it, given your background and heritage, the way you cook. And so tell me a little bit more about that. Like, you've got this incredible kind of heritage that speaks to the way we live now in a global world.
Yeah, so my mum is Thai. Her grandfather was Chinese. And my dad, you know, he's English, but he's actually mixed himself. So his mother was half Dutch, half English, and his father was half Swiss French, half English. And my grandmother, to add to that, she lived in Indonesia when she was a child, just before the war. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of influences. I was brought up in the Middle East. So I lived there till I was 8. So again, my first meals out were Indian meals because there's a really big Indian community in Qatar where we live.
Of course. I'm thrilled to hear this anyway. Yes.
Yeah. So for me, flavor has always been, you know, the big thing for me. I've always loved food. So I did have a few smash years when I was a teenager with my dad at the helm. But, you know, that all adds to the tapestry of it all.
I think it absolutely does. And tapestry is a great way to talk about it because, you know, you bring all those cultural influences into your cooking and actually daily home cooking then becomes really creative and really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the three children because I get often asked about how you introduce flavor to children.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that can be tricky sometimes, you know, but of course, for me, it was never an issue. My kids were basically having a little bit of chili powder put in their meals from when they turned one. I mean, it was only a tiny little bit of chili powder. But I suppose if you had to advise parents on how to introduce flavor into their children's sort of daily eating repertoire, what would you recommend?
Yeah, that's a great question because similar to yourself, for me, they've always had sushi. They've always had massaman curries. You know, it's just been something they were kind of weaned on. And I joke that I was weaned on sweet chili, but...
I love the sound of your parents.
I know. My mum would sometimes give me not a whole bottle of sweet chili, but she'd have a rotisserie chicken from the supermarket with a bottle of sweet chili. Lunch done. in Thailand, that's the kind of thing they do.
So good.
But we give them the foods that we're having, but without the chili, actually. So they love curries, but I, you know, hold it back a bit. They still moan a little bit about spice, but, you know, generally speaking, they love the flavours. And that's what it's about, introducing them to those flavours, and then they can add heat later. There's plenty of time for that.
You know, you make such a good point about the difference between flavor and heat. When people talk about spices, they tend to think that it will be chili hot. But actually, heat and flavor are two very different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, a lot of my curries, they don't taste much different. If I take the chilies out and I add them to my own dish at the end, you still got the same dish, essentially. And yeah, it just works for family. And actually, as my kids are getting a little bit older, they're still young, it's so lovely to have those family meals. And, you know, I made a Singapore prawn dish last night and we just sort of made a little bit of the sauce with less heat for them. So I just took some out of the pan, added a bit more stock and a bit more egg, and they were able to enjoy it with us. So it was great.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And do you do that thing? The thing that I do is I put the chilies or the chili sauce on the side as well, so people can just adjust.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. My husband and I, we love our chilies. You know, so we always will have that on the side or some chili oil, and then they can eat it as it is, but they get to enjoy those, you know, delicious meals.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Hold up.
For anyone who hasn't yet experimented with lots of ingredients from around Asia, what would your big tip be?
Start off small. You don't have to get it all at once. You know, pick a couple of dishes you want to cook. You might find that you have, especially with my recipes, which have not that many ingredients in it, you might have a lot of those ingredients already, and start off small. And actually, you might surprise yourself. And I think people are a lot more daunted about Asian cooking. I think there is a perception there's millions of ingredients, but actually, I think my skill is sort of condensing that down and distilling it to its simplest format, as simple as you can get whilst being delicious. So start off small and then sort of get that confidence and taste as you go. Mm. Especially with this kind of food, it's about tasting it and adjusting it. I might like it slightly sweeter than you. Add a bit more lime or fish sauce, but do it in increments, you know. Mm-hmm. Do it small
and
bits
taste
at a time.
As you go along. Absolutely. So you can just adjust it
exactly
to your flavour. And I suppose just not being afraid of it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, the worst thing, I think most kitchen things can, disasters, if you like, can be rectified. Too much sugar, you can add a bit more salt and a bit more liquid. You know, obviously there is a point where you go past that point of return. But definitely just, you know, experiment, because you're not going to get better unless you do that. My first Thai curry was a disaster. I remember getting a sachet of Thai curry paste, the authentic stuff, and it was in a sachet. And my husband and I'd met him a long time ago. We thought, oh, let's make this green curry. And we put the whole sachet in it without really realizing it was about 10 portions worth. I mean, it blew our heads off.
Wow.
Didn't put us off, but it was like, oh, read the packet first.
Right, definitely. And just the other thing to say, so there's two ways to think about cooking. There's cooking with Asian ingredients, so it's not specific to a region or a culinary heritage as such. But also it's the other way, isn't it? So I will often go and buy, you know, the ingredients I need for Sichuan cooking, mm-hmm, or, you know, proper Thai cooking. And then there's jars and bottles lying around. And so both of those, in one way, it's entry level into ingredients from, mm-hmm, you know, East and Southeast Asia. But also it's when you have ingredients lying around that you've used a specific cuisine, then I suppose your cookbook's going to help people.
Yeah, exactly. So it's those flavours. And it's those flavours that make me excited. You know, that spicy, salty, sour, sweet. I guess it's that flavour profile. And so I try and inject some of that into the dishes I'm cooking. Actually, some of the dishes are more, in inverted commas, authentic. You know, my Japanese friend, she sort of shared with me a couple of her dishes. So we've got dishes like that as well.
Oh, wow.
So it's not just sort of hybrid dishes or
got
whatever.
You.
It's a combination. Or my interpretation, you know. I think
that's a nice
you
way
can
to
interpret,
put it.
You know, I interpreted my Auntie Deng's pad zi yu. They're my Thai sauce, soy sauce noodles. They're not exactly authentic, but they are my version of it, you know. So you can get those flavours. And actually, I think often those dishes are better than a takeaway, you know. You're going to be healthier, quicker,
absolutely,
cheaper. And you've got something on your table that you think, wow, this is delicious. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter whether it's authentic,
sure,
or not.
Sure, and so quick. You can just,
absolutely,
cook with those ingredients so quickly.
Yeah, I rarely get a takeaway these days because I know that I can get something on my table quicker.
I love that. So look, we've talked about your family and I can just imagine what your dinner tables must look like. I can only imagine. Dominique, please invite me around. But let's talk a little bit about what it was like for you as a child and this idea of a rotisserie chicken just being served with sweet chili. I'm totally nicking that idea. But what were you eating when you were growing up?
So my mum would make things like satay. And this is probably my favourite childhood dish because it just, you know, reminds me so much of that. I remember she'd make massive plates of it, and that would be all we'd have. It wasn't just the starter. She would just make a platter piled high with satay and peanut sauce. And actually, although she's Thai, she didn't make it from scratch. There are these amazing sachets, and you can still buy it with the same branding on that you buy from the Asian supermarket that has the sort of mix, and it's essentially just turmeric and sugar and some other, probably some MSG in there, that she sort of would marinate the chicken in, and then with coconut milk, and then you'd make the peanut sauce. And she even still buys me those today. I don't use them as much, you know, at all. But so I have got a drawer full of them. But it just reminds me of home, that lovely satay. She'd make Thai curry. So even though we might not have eaten them because they were spicier, the smell just reminds me of childhood.
I bet. And it's sort of home, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just familiar.
So what was your favourite dish when you were growing up? Is it the satay? Is it...
It is the satay. I mean, here, most of the time you don't get great satay from your average Thai restaurant. It just isn't the same. But when it is on a charcoal grill, we are talking something completely different. It's amazing. I absolutely love the flavour. And I crave it, you know. I need to find the place for it.
And what did it get, like, served with? Did you get salad on the side or rice? Or talk me through the sort of moment of eating satay. This sounds amazing.
Yeah, she would serve it with rice. I mean, rice is a huge part of Thai cuisine, a lot of Asian cuisine. My mother would just make pots of it, you know, rice. That's also a familiar smell, that sort of slightly sweet, warm smell. It would be jasmine, because that's the rice that the Thai people use most often. Probably some cucumber salad. There's a cucumber pickle that I love. I mean, it's sweet and sour. And those are the flavours I love. It goes so well with the satay, with loads of peanut sauce. I still love peanut sauce today. I absolutely love it.
It's so good, isn't it? There's just something so lovely and cozy about peanut sauce.
Oh, gosh, I could bathe in it.
And what's interesting about that, because, of course, rice gets demonized a lot now, but it's quite a balanced plate, isn't it? Because you have a bit of rice, you have a bit of the protein from the chicken, you've got the protein from the peanuts, you've then got the veg, you've got the cucumber, a bit of raw salad.
Yeah.
And were you all sitting around a table? Were you all together eating?
Yes, I can remember. You know, sitting all together. And it's just, funnily enough, my dad, not as big a fan of spicy food, but loves the satay, you know. So, yeah, we would sit around and, you know, very lucky to have had those flavour combinations when I was young, you know, because it sort of set me up.
It sounds brilliant. Tell me, if we can't get hold of these, like, incredible sachets of peanut sauce, is there one, is there a recipe for that in your book?
Yes, there is in Dominique's Kitchen. And this is what my mum would do, actually. Red curry paste. Get a good authentic one. And you can actually buy, there's a particular brand you can buy from most supermarkets. It's pungent. And there's a vegan version as well. And it's just got amazing depth of flavour. And you add coconut milk and peanut butter and some sugar. And that's
coconut milk, peanut butter, sugar, really?
Yeah. And it is, I mean, that's how I make my peanut sauce. I've got other hacks of doing simpler versions. So you could do one with sriracha, even gochujang. So various, chili oil as well is another one. So you want something that adds the heat and the spice, depth of flavour as well. Sweetness, I use brown sugar. I don't use palm sugar because it's just not as easily available. You could use honey as well. So
I mean, brown sugar makes actually quite a good mineral substitute, doesn't it, I find. In terms of coconut milk, so what are you looking for when you buy a can of coconut milk, please?
Yeah, you want as high a percentage extract as possible.
Good girl. So
I'm thinking 60% would be a good amount. Some are mixed with loads of stabilizers. And they're not all equal. I've eaten all of them, you know, in the name of research. And my husband will say, this isn't made with, you know, the good one, is it? Because you can tell it's more gloopy. However, it still makes a delicious meal if that's all you can get. So I'm a big fan of getting what you can. You know, don't not make that curry because you can only get a lower one. But if you can get one, all the better.
So look for a higher percentage of coconut extract.
Exactly.
I mean, that's key, isn't it?
That's key. And if you can find one without stabilizers in, and there aren't that many available, to be fair, there are a couple of brands, but if you can get one without stabilizers, then even better.
And then on the satay, if we didn't have a charcoal grill at home, say, for instance, which we don't mostly, what would you recommend? Would you actually stick that under the grill to get it quite smoky, the burnt bits?
Yeah, I do grill or griddle. I mean, my griddle always sticks. I try not to use it too often because it does smoke the house out, but it does give that more of the charred flavour if you can.
Sure.
Even a frying pan, a dry frying pan can do it, to be honest.
And yes, the griddle's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you do get the lovely burnt bits and it just shortcuts the charcoal effect. Mm. But, you know, yes, the fire alarm is a genuine problem.
It really is.
That's brilliant. So let's talk a little bit about some of your confessions in the kitchen. I think we find this part of the podcast very grounding to know that expert home cooks can often have errors and mistakes and disasters at home. So what is your biggest cooking disaster, would you say?
So I went to Leith's Cookery School a few years ago. I'm not a professional chef. I'm definitely a home cook, but I wanted to sort of do this course to immerse myself. And we had an exam. And it was, I can't remember what meat it was, but I'd done a time plan in advance. But I decided on the day to ignore the time plan. Great idea. So I didn't put the meat on in time. So A, the meat was about to not be cooked. B, the jus I'd supposedly done had sort of dried off. And I was at this point where I'm thinking, okay, I've got 5 minutes. And a lovely lady next to me whispered to me, you can use some of mine. And I, you know, half a second thought about it. And I thought, this is ridiculous. Mum of three cheats in Leith's exam. No, I cannot do this. So so I cobbled together a last minute jus. I took some of the stock and viciously reduced it. And actually, the whole dish, I actually managed to get away with it, but they did detect my sort of last minute cooking techniques. So I got points deducted, but I actually presented a meal on time.
Well, that's a relief. I love the sound of this woman, by the way, helping you cheat on the course. It is different, isn't it? You have a different vibe almost when you're a home cook versus when you do professional cooking. But I love that you did that because that sounds wonderful. Have you ever served something ready-made and pretended you made it yourself, apart from the satay sauce? What's your kind of ready, you know, almost like a store swap-in, if you like?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I always use paste. So, for example, people ask me about Thai curry paste, and I've never made one. Okay, so confession.
No, stop.
Never made.
Mic drops.
Never made a Thai curry paste.
You have never made a Thai curry paste. There is literally hope for all of us.
Exactly. And my mum never made a Thai curry paste. We just use this amazing shop-bought, authentic Thai, proper Thai curry paste. And in fact, I've been to Thai restaurants in Thailand, a street food store, making delicious food, and I spied the same tub out the back. So
did you?
I did. And so I think it's completely acceptable. Life's too short, right? You want a quick meal in 20 minutes that does not involve making a curry paste.
This is so good. Sorry, I'm just going to take a moment now to let this seep in. But so if we're going to find a really good Thai curry paste, what are we looking for?
So for me, there are actually a few Thai brands. So if you happen to be in an Asian supermarket, you're pretty safe there. Anything that's in that shop would be good. But I, again, as I said, I often just go to my local supermarket because I want things to be accessible. Mm. I have tried every curry paste on the market.
I can imagine.
Literally did a taste test. Some are horrendous. But I would say if that's all you can find on your shop home, still use it, but you will just have to add a bit more soy, fish sauce, sugar, chilies. You know, you're going to have to pimp it. But again, don't not make that Thai curry because I still want you to be able to eat a tasty meal if you're coming home late from work and that's all you can get.
That's such a good point because I tend to I call it sort of reinforce ready pastes a lot. So I'll have like lemongrass just sitting in my freezer and a bit of galangal, you know, and you just basically zhuzh.
Yeah.
And it's still, you get still a speedier end result than actually having to make it from scratch.
Exactly. And you had another good point is the freezer. It's literally my, you know, savior. You can freeze everything from the lemongrass, the chilies, because I've been guilty of finding chilies in the bottom of my fridge and thinking, oh, why didn't I freeze that? So definitely use your freezer and then you're not going to have that wastage.
I love that. And, you know, I don't think we realise just how much stuff can be frozen. You can literally freeze
anything.
Anything.
I mean, almost anything.
Everything.
Coconut milk. Now,
yes.
This is one people don't realise. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're making for yourself, for example, and you just got a small curry or, you know, some dishes do require just half a tin, well, put it in the freezer. Label it, because I've been guilty of
that. Well, the label thing, yes. I mean, yes. This is a big sob story, isn't it? Putting things in the freezer without actually labeling
it. And then kind of sniffing it. I've been guilty of using things months, years. Once I gave my husband sausages that were about 3 years in the freezer. He's still alive. So,
please do not try this at home. Goodness.
I think it's more about quality rather than, death or anything. But so the freezer, brilliant. The only problem is once my freezer broke down, it actually broke down. So I cried. I mean,
that is the worst case scenario.
Yeah, that was bad because, I mean, I literally had odds and ends. And I even freeze bits of rice, you know, little tubs. And you
think... Now, rice is an interesting one because with rice, you really need to get rid of the starch in it, don't you, when you cook it? Because otherwise, if you put starchy rice in the freezer... It's not great.
It can be gloopy. But here's the thing. In Thailand, there's a dish called khao tom and it needs gloopy rice. Yeah.
So, how do we find this? Is this in one of your cookbooks?
I actually do have a recipe for my version of it in the Asian pantry. And, you know, it was my mum's favourite breakfast when she was a kid. It's just adding rice to stock and you can use raw rice or you can use cooked rice. And if it's gloopy, then it's absolutely fine.
Oh, well, there's
so, yeah, used for everything.
Do you have a guilty pleasure? What do you eat when no one's looking?
Yeah, I do. I am trying to reduce the habit. It's chocolate, but it's the cheap milk kind. I'm so sorry.
You're so busted.
I'm such a heathen. I can't help. You know what? I've tried to get into dark chocolate. I try. Every now and then I go, right, I'll try. And it's like, nah, I cannot do it. I still want to try because I know it's meant to be healthy and then it would make it all right. It wouldn't be a guilty pleasure anymore. And I get through. I mean, if I have chocolate, I'm talking about a big slab, like a 100-gram bar slab. Right,
goodness.
That is what I have.
Okay.
So I try, and I normally do it every day.
Oh my God.
So I'm trying, but I have had 2 days off this week. So we are looking good.
We're still sort of relatively at the start of the year, aren't we? We're going to have to edit this out. You cannot admit to eating a bar of milk chocolate a day. I forbid it.
Only in the night, though. Definitely not in the day. I'd never do that.
That's hilar. Is there anything you like? So one of my big guilty pleasures is like pickle on crackers, like just proper like Indian pickle. Do you do strange things with chili oil?
I have chili oil on everything.
So good.
I make my own chili oil. So it's great with peanut butter on toast. A bit random, but delicious. I have it on, if I have an egg, often a quick lunch might be stir fry, even like a stir fry leek or some charred cabbage, literally that's it, with a fried egg. And I'll put about 2 tablespoons of chili oil on it. The bits, not the oil.
Right.
And that is what I'll have for lunch often. That'll be my quick working from home lunch.
Well, and why not? That sounds unreal.
So delicious.
And you've got some veg in there.
You know, some veg.
You've got. And then you can follow it. You can chase it with a bar of milk chocolate afterwards.
Yeah. I love it.
But that's lovely to hear. And I think guilty pleasures just make us all human, don't they?
Definitely.
What about snacks for the kids? What do you give them that you shouldn't really be declaring, but you must?
Yeah, I try and actually give them healthy food. I police them a lot more. I'm terrible. But so I will, if I've got time, I'll make oat bars with banana instead of sugar and, you know, all this stuff. And then their grandma goes and gives them loads of chocolate. So what can we do? I try my best.
I think we all do. It's so hard, though. You know, sometimes you just need to roll with the punches.
Yeah, absolutely. So I give them, you know, when they come home, it'll often be a rice cake with sugar-free peanut butter, which is the one I like anyway, crunchy, and some fruit. They get a lot of dried fruit, which probably isn't good for the teeth. So that, you know, you can't be perfect. And you can, this probably is the worst thing I give them, is you can buy, they've got no sugar in them, but they're fruit, concentrated fruit rolls.
Oh, I know
that
those
kind of thing.
Ones.
So not with sugar. And they are processed. They say they're one of your 5 a day. And I know it's just they're easy to take to school.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, in the morning I do make containers for their dried apricots. And I
Gosh.
Do give them a some apple and stuff. But actually it's just a handy thing. And I know they're probably not so great and they are expensive. So, and they can't take nuts to school. So my nut bars, obviously they can't take them to school. But, you know, do you try and give them healthy stuff? Because they get a lot. They do get a lot of sugar
I think
elsewhere.
3 children at that age, you know, doing packed lunches and lunch boxes.
Oh, God. Well, mine have school dinners, but they still take snacks with them, which I was like, really? You have to take snacks?
Gosh.
So I, you know, try and do lots of fruit if I can.
Well, this sounds perfect, actually, and enormously doable. I have some quick fire questions for you, but they really are quick fire questions. So you're not allowed to spend too much time mulling over them, by the way. You've been warned. Is you're in the kitchen a lot. So what's your least favorite kitchen job?
Oh, God, I hate clearing out the food bins. I really hate that bit because they break. Oh, God, yeah. And then
Can't
I leave it.
Can't you get a child to do that?
Yeah, I just know that it'd end up being more messy,
this
wouldn't
is true.
It?
Mm. Favorite kitchen job?
I enjoy the tasting. I'm so greedy. Definitely the eating afterwards.
Well, that's the best part of the cooking, isn't it? That you get to actually get in there and eat first.
Exactly.
What does your perfect sandwich have in it?
Ooh, I see. I struggle with sandwiches in a way, actually. But my chicken satay, you know, couldn't beat that.
How do you do that? Just chop it up?
You could grill your chicken and put loads of peanut sauce in it. I'd have to have pickles with it because I love a pickle. So when I say pickles, I don't mean a gherkin, although I love gherkins. Pickled carrots and onions and radish or something with coriander. Make it banh mi style.
Oh, right. Like lovely. Yes, that sounds great. The best kitchen tip you've ever had, is there like a little secret that you'd like to share with us?
Well, apart from the freezing tip, I mean, I think get a julienne peeler. That's a great thing because I don't like to do loads of chopping. I keep my equipment to a minimum, but this little tool is great for, you know, making that shredded carrot for your little pickles.
And I'm guessing that you always clean up after yourself after every meal.
Oh, yes. I mean, I am, admittedly, a messy cook. If my husband comes down mid-cook, you know, he sort of has to quickly turn away because it is a bit hectic. But I am trying. I'm trying to get better.
We can all be better.
We can all improve.
Excellent. Your most trusted recipe. Let's do one that's not a satay. Is there anything else you just knock up?
Oh, a Thai curry.
Oh, I mean, really?
Yeah. Again, it's for me, it's, you know, you use that paste. I use a couple of tablespoons of the paste, a tin of coconut milk, half a tin of water, and then sort of brown sugar and fish sauce. And great, it works every time and so delicious.
That sounds incredible. Worst thing you've ever eaten?
Oh, God. I was in Milan once and we tried this pressed fish roe, and I can't remember the name of it, and it was sort of in a salad. My husband, who's really not fussy, was gagging in the corner. The lady who owned the restaurant was standing over us.
You don't want that, really.
So it was kind of gaggable, basically. No, I'm sorry, my palate wasn't as sophisticated.
That's fine. It sounds quite interesting at any rate. One food that you love, but your family just can't wrap their head around.
I do like lime pickle on my poppadoms.
Oh.
So whenever we have an Indian and, you know, whether I cook it or whatever, and we have the poppadoms to begin with, we like the mango chutney on it, some mint yogurt, and I have a little bit of the pickle and everyone's like, what are you doing, Mum?
Is that almost too strong as a flavour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
we'll have husband, to break them, won't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, he can't. Actually, my eight-year-old daughter's recently, I couldn't believe it. There wasn't much in the jar and she's decided she wants some.
Yeah.
And kimchi, which is, you know, I'm going to have to share my kimchi with people.
Kimchi.
Now.
We must talk about kimchi at some point. Ultimate comfort food.
Actually, I love an apple crumble.
Oh.
Yeah, I love an apple crumble. Or a sticky toffee pudding. I mean, I actually love my desserts. And I made homemade custard the other day. Obviously, I made it slightly eggy and made it lumpy, but I rectified it in time. The family mostly didn't detect the egginess. And it was lovely, though. It was lovely.
Oh, and it's so cozy, isn't
it?
There's something about apple crumble.
Oh, my mum, even though she's Thai, she actually used to make us apple crumble.
Oh.
So it sort of reminds me of that.
See, yeah. That's wonderful, isn't
love it?
It's one of the first sort of British/English desserts I learned to make, in fact, when I came here as a student.
Yeah, I love it.
So I totally get with that. Listen, obviously lots for you to get excited about. I mean, we discovered you via Jamie Oliver, you know,
yes,
on television, and a lot has happened since. But what makes you most optimistic about the future?
Well, my second book out, obviously, that is, you know, for me, that is a dream come true. So excited to do the book tour, do the demos, get the word out, I guess.
And when is it out again?
It's out on the 20th of June, I think.
Right.
Yeah, so lots to look forward to. And, you know, trying to be more present with my kids. That is something I have scheduled in and I'm just trying to work on, because it is hard as a working mum finding that space. But they're only young once, so, you know.
Oh, well, wishing you lots of both success on the new book baby and also parenting front. And thank you so much for coming along. It's been really lovely chatting to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Good Food Podcast. Join us next week, where Tom Kerridge returns to talk to Paul A. Young about what to do with your leftover chocolates. Don't forget, our bonus cook-along episode is out on Thursday. For more recipes and inspiration, please visit bbcgoodfood.com.